ordinance in Deschutes County was that the planning staff was not prepared to enforce the ordinance. They do not have the guidelines or the design manuals ready at the time the ordinance was in effect. We submitted this plan, we were told this wasn't sufficient. I asked why not, they said, well, you haven't shown us that the vegetation shades the lot to the north of this particular piece of property. It sure seemed obvious to me that a 59-foot high tree would throw more shade than a 30-foot high house. Subsequent to that, we went to the next program, which was to actually draw the shade patterns of the trees and show that they shaded the lot. The other requirement was the engineer's statement, which is shown on the drawings. The only thing I know that I could have done in addition to that was take my firstborn child down and let him hold it as hostage in case something was wrong with the plan itself. I felt that...
Did you do that?
No, I didn't. I only have one, and I'm afraid that's just too valuable to me. I found that after a little practice and a little work on this, that I could go to a lot and tell a person within 5 or 10 minutes whether that lot would come under the existing vegetation variance to the ordinance. I believe that at one time I went to a work session that was put on by the planning department, and I was told that there were 13 lots submitted for this particular exception, and all of them were granted. I was pretty proud of that because we'd done the maps and submitted for 12 of those. What was not taken into account was the 30 other people that I had talked to and said, your lot doesn't stand a chance. They said, what are my options? I said, well, you can apply for a variance to the ordinance, which we call the House of Hearts and Flowers routine. That at the time was $250 or $300, and very few of them were being granted. In fact, I know of none that were granted at all. They asked, what options do I have after that? I said, my recommendation to you is to sell that lot, take your losses, and buy a lot that you can build your dream house on. At this time, we were primarily working in the Sun River area. Very few people that we talked to were interested in the effects of solar access. Subsequent to that time, I think that through use and design, people have learned to work with the ordinance. I also feel that people have bought lots now since the ordinance was in effect, and they were not blindsided, and I feel that they have purchased these lots knowing that the ordinance was in effect, and so that they are stuck with the ordinance that was in effect at the time they bought the lot. And the only other point, since we're all on our time, that I like to make is that access was available to a knowledgeable buyer under the existing ordinances prior to the initiation of the solar ordinance in Deschutes County. And by that I mean you could buy a lot and you could be guaranteed that your neighbors could not build a house which would limit your solar access under the existing ordinances. So I think for the wise buyer, the need for the solar ordinance was not there. Personally and professionally, I believe that we have gone overboard in the area of solar ordinances. I think that we should encourage solar access and solar development, but I don't think that we should mandate it to people that really don't want it. I'll be glad to answer your question.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Solar.
I guess I missed the point. Are you for the bill or against it?
I'm in favor of the bill. I think it is important to encourage the right to solar access, but I do not feel it should be mandated under the current ordinances that exist in Deschutes County.
Thank you.
Mr. McDonald, thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Come on up and we'll give you 5 minutes before we close the hearing on this and continue it next week.
Thank you.
Also, if Mr. Locke would come up, and I'll get to you in just a minute, Mr. Locke, on the other issue. Come on up. We're waiting for Mr. Gilman. As soon as he gets here, we'll go into work session on the recycling bill.
Okay, I'm Charlie McDonald, and I've been attempting to build a house in the city of Portland and dealing with the solar code, and I'd like to give you some of my personal experiences with the code. We purchased an infill lot with approximately 10,000 square feet, and it has a 47% slope to the east. Strict compliance with this code would require that we build a house that, when you viewed it from the street, you'd only see 3 feet of the roof. Now that to me is totally unacceptable for anybody to build, or if I was to build and try and resell the house, I mean, it's just not an acceptable proposition. We have had a neighbor that has been using the code to stop development of the property. He would prefer that it remain undeveloped so that he can have a park next to him and not have to pay for it. Our proposed structure meets all of the other building requirements, and the main one is your height limitation, which is 35 feet, and our building height is 29 feet. Yet we still can't comply with the solar code. We've offered to hit the roofs, do many different things to accommodate this. Developers here have estimated that it would cost about $500 to make a house comply, additional lot costs or whatever. My figures are completely different than that, and I'd like to give you a few of these. First of all, I had to go through a second solar hearing adjustment, and the fee for that was $100. I had to survey the neighbor's house. That came to $209. We had the Energy Department, State of Oregon, do a solar analysis, which was done for free, but it did require their time to do that. Since this has taken longer than 6 months, we had to reapply at the bank for a credit and plan check, which cost me another $218. It has taken me approximately 40 hours of my time away from my business, and my time, based on last year's salary, would equate to about $1,200. I've had many meetings with Mr. McGeever of Conservation Management Services, city planning, architects, structural engineers, Home Builders Association, my attorney, trying to resolve this matter. Par Lumber Company has informed me that the material costs have gone up between $350 and $400. If you take my time away from business, basically I'm in charge of sales at our company, and on the profitability of our company amounts to about $1,200 to $1,300 in lost sales. Not to mention, if I was able to start tomorrow to build that house, that I would have lost about $8,000 in tax deductions this year. Also, the mortgage interest rates have risen 0.5% since when I should have been able to be in my house and have final complete mortgage thing going. That amounts to $34 a month through the term of my mortgage, whatever that happens to be, if it's 7-year average or 20 years. Another thing that I hadn't thought about until I met with my CPA going over my taxes, that if this should go on for another year, I have a $53,000 gain on the sale of my last house, and that will be subject to capital gains tax. Conservatively, to date, if it doesn't go any farther, I figure this has cost me over $5,000. I don't know where it's going to end. I'm still waiting to go to city council. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. McDonald. We appreciate it. Questions?
Just a quick one. Are you in the midst of a variance procedure before the council?
Yes, I am. It's been appealed to City Council of Portland.
The neighbors within a certain distance have the right to remonstrate?
Yes, he has the right to appeal it. And
thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Shaw.
Do you feel that the ordinance in Portland was instigated because of the state law, and do you feel it's discriminatory to you because of the state law, or do you think it could be a lot a weaker ordinance?
I think the law should be weaker. Strict compliance, as you can see in this particular lot, where I have a very steep sloping lot, to have to build a house that you'd only see 3 feet of the roof seems ludicrous to me. Particularly, we have a neighbor who has a 50-year-old house. He has trees on the south side of his house. He is not intending to use solar, but he is using the code to stop me from building a house that otherwise is a buildable lot. And it's creating quite a hardship. I mean, $5,000 is nothing to laugh about. It takes me a hell of a long time to earn $5,000. And I think a voluntary compliance is what is needed, because I am for solar. I looked at it for our house, this is the first new house that we have ever built, and I didn't see it to be cost effective. We elected not to go there. We are going with 6-inch walls and stronger insulation package, but as far as actually orienting the house for solar, we elected not to do that because we didn't feel it was cost effective.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Vegas.
In your cost-effective analysis, is that based upon the current cost of energy?
Current cost of energy, yes.
Did you do any analysis on what it might be when the, let's say 10 years from now, when we go from surplus to deficit, have to bring on a new resources at higher costs?
I didn't do that. I'm not sure that it's going to be 10 years from now we're going to need additional solar or additional power. Nobody's really been able to say that. Well, so I don't know whether you can or not.
I'm not sure. All I know is that the projections are that by 1996 we could use up our surplus, and conservation and renewable resources are supposed to be our first. But it seems to me that one of the problems, and I'd be curious in our next hearing we have some data on this, is that a lot of analysis is done on the basis of solar energy being put in now, whether it's cost effective now, in a home that's built, I assume, to last at least 30, maybe 40 years. Mm-hmm. And the cost of energy between now and that 30, 40 years is bound to go up, and it may be at some point in time in the future that solar energy is very cost effective. And I think some of the solar access that separate from whether the ordinance is good or bad, mm-hmm. and you may have a very good case about the Portland ordinance. That's not my question here, but I'm just wondering, we're getting a lot of these statements about cost effectiveness, and I think we need to look at the fact that 20 years from now, when there's still a 20-year life on that house, that solar energy may indeed be very cost effective. But there may not be any solar access because we haven't protected
it. We've used it up. I saw a study that Bonneville Power did, and it showed that roughly 94% of the cost savings on solar was rooftop applications. And in this case, we completely protect the rooftop application. We do have shade on the side of his south-facing wall. So we're talking 6%. Of a savings of $8, so we're talking maybe 30 cents, 40 cents.
Yes. And you may have a very valid point.
Even if it goes up 10 times, we're talking $4 a year.
City ordinance. I guess my point on that is it's not my job to write City of Portland's ordinances, but you may have a very valid complaint.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll close the hearing at this point on 2906. Mr. Locke, let me open the hearing on 3019. Mr. Locke's out of town. We'll give you a few minutes, Mr. Locke. So we apologize for the fact you've had to wait so long, and then we'll go into tire recycling. Welcome.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Victor Locke from 28350 Mountain Road in West Lynn, and I represent the Cora Columbia Canoe Club. We're a membership of about 220 members that represent about 400 family members of low-impact canoe paddlers for recreation only, and we support this bill 3019. We feel that there should be a charge for all users of the river so that there may be facilities for the people there and also for overnight camping. However, we would like to you to consider a amendment to this on section 6.1d. It should read environmental group member from the current land-based user, general public. We think that a person from an environmental group should serve on this committee. And other than that, we think the bill is a good one, and we do support it. So if you would take on the consideration.
We made a note of that, Mr. Locke, and we'll see as we get into that point that we'll have that as part of the record.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. I'll close the hearing on 3016, 3019 then. And open the work session, House Bill 2022, relating to tire recycling. And
I lost my troops, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah,
we've got, I don't know where Representative Berea is. Representative Anderson, or Representative Peterson will be back in a few minutes.
Let me get them from outside.
Yes, sir.
Are you going to hear during House Bill 3027 all day?
Are you part of that business group that Representative Farbush was telling me about?
Yeah,
Yes, if you want to wait a few minutes, we will take the few of you who are from out of town, and we'll open at least for that purpose, and then we'll continue the hearing on Friday.
I'm
yes. Yes, we're going to just check.
Oh, okay.
Don't pay any attention.
You just work here.
I just work here, and nobody pays any attention to me.
Oh, poor me.
All they do is ask me questions.
She's not had the best of days, has she?
Right?
That's right there.
Why don't you have this? How is this, though? I have no control.
We're not so sure you can vote for
that. Yeah.
You can't vote on that side of the desk, do
you?
No,
you think so. Is this the tire stop we finally worked
yeah.
on?
Okay.
Can I just keep this
yes.
file?
Yes.
And then it'll,
yes.
somehow we'll get around to right. escaping this somewhere
four, five, six,
in the next time.
Who are we missing now?
Huh?
Soa?
Soa?
Where did Soa go now?
He's back.
Oh, is he here?
Yes.
All right, he's here. Representative Soa, are you here?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, wait. Slow so I can write this down.
Yeah, I'm going to leave. 5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
Fred Parkinson, this.
Do we have copies of the bill record?
Yes. Yeah. This, it's in your file.
It's in our file.
Would you look at your file, please?
If the members would find 2022-9, that's what we're going to be working from. And I'm happy to report that it's pretty clean. It's just, I think it's ready to go to the floor.
Okay.
Great.
Bye.
Why don't you quickly tell us,
we'll have to go through it a little bit. There's
okay.
a change
yeah.
you should know about. We've got the bill nailed down so that it's new tires only. We've deleted all, or it's written now so that it's plain that tires on new cars and used cars are not covered. If you will flip to page... Well, I covered that, so we can just flip right over to page...
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Anderson.
What? Why did you exempt what I call new retreads?
Well, that was the working committee, and I think this committee has pretty much come to that. You're talking about tires on new cars?
No, not new retreads, new cars.
New cars.
No, I understand the new car is gone. I don't know, I imagine... 30% or 40% of tires are retreaded.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative
Parkinson. The problem, Representative Anderson, is caused by a tire when it's discarded. And you only discard them once, so it would make sense that you would only collect the dollar once.
Okay. Seems fair enough.
Oh, I added
right
that
on.
One, didn't I?
I'm glad there's a wall between the two of you.
Well, then when the new car tire is discarded, we can still collect it on that?
Touché!
I'm trying just, there's a few typos and things that have been cleaned up that I'm not going to even mention, if that's all right with you.
Go ahead.
If you'll flip to page 5, starting on line 8, we did relax the requirements there. We set a bond of $5,000 or financial assurance acceptable to the department. That's eased a little bit. Before it said an equivalent amount of financial assurance or something. Continuing on, you tell me if you see anything I'm missing. Page 7, line 15, the department must give reasonable notice to gain access. Page 8, line 18, we have the Anderson artificial fishing reef in there.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Anderson.
I know you got this ready to go. Can you stand 3 more words?
Well, tell us what those are, Representative Bennett.
Well, it's regard to artificial fishing reefs. And Oregon State University, about 4 years ago, did an exhaustive engineering study on fishing reefs and recommended some further studies on wave action. And I'm wondering if we couldn't use part of these funds to complete that study. And we could just after reefs and feasibility studies or something like that, that I think it's a real worthy project not to close the door on.
Mr. Chairman, you want me to respond to that?
Yes, please.
Later on, I'll tell you that we took out the entire section of bald tires, because one of the witnesses said that gave it extra weight. And I'm not so sure, but what a mandatory study in here using that those funds might not be some extra weight, too.
Not mandatory. Allowable.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Ekus.
Wouldn't these or use for artificial fishing reefs cover it? Doesn't that cover feasibility?
I would think it covers feasibility for that.
Yeah, you could probably duck in under that.
Yeah, I think so.
They have the authorization to develop plans and programs. Okay. All you got to do is pressure.
Maybe I can duck in the Senate.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative Parks.
Page 9, I think we addressed the concern of Representative Johnson and Representative Gilman on cleaning up existing waste tire piles. Line 1 on page 9 says it mentions the waste tire piles, and then if you'll skip down to line 11, it says the department may use monies to assist a permittee in removing or processing waste tires, and then there's conditions down below that. But if you'll notice on line 15, the bill is very loose on what the department could do, because, for instance, it says special circumstances make such assistance appropriate. Continues on to say if it would bankrupt the business or et cetera. So I think the department under their rulemaking authority will have a lot of latitude, and it shouldn't put anyone out of business, and I think these two representatives were concerned about that. I think okay. Your concerns are addressed.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's a typo on page 10, line 27. It should read sections 1 to 18. Another
Representative Soa.
I have in my other copy proposal to omit the Attorney General's action and things. Have you done that in this particular copy?
They phrased it differently.
We talked to
the department. May request
to Nat. She came up with that line sheet. To the department. May request the Attorney General. Page 13, page 10.
Representative Soa, I think the language is changed where it says the department may request the Attorney General. Before it said the Attorney General shall, I think, didn't it?
Yes.
And I think that's about the best we could do and still have some the ultimate leverage.
Well,
now section 16 has got a very interesting thing on line 28. We'll start in section 16. The commission shall adopt rules, and then you'll notice it says on line 28, the rules may exempt, continuing on the other page, waste tires from certain types of vehicles. And the reason we put this in was so that there's bound to be problems created, and the department by rule can exempt the problems.
Yeah, yes.
It mentions that again on line 20 where it says any device excluded by rule, so there's safeguards in there so that we shouldn't have to have a special session. Your little working group took out the entire whole section 20, as I mentioned before, about bald tires.
Yeah, we took out bald tires.
Page 13, we're getting into the revenue part. And throughout, we changed the word tax to the word fee. Seemed to be more palatable. On line four, there's a conceptual amendment that we will request to be put in there with the effective date of the imposition of the fee.
Is that page 13?
Page 13, it'll be somewhere, it'll be starting the sentence on line four. It'll say effective 1/1/88, if that's the committee's wish. Wait, otherwise, it would have gone into effect 90 days after the end of the session.
January 1?
88.
Uh-huh. We'll have to have those amendments prepared before it goes to the floor. On line five, it'll say of all new replacement tires.
Right.
Line seven, replacement tire.
Line seven also says new replacement tire. You'll notice on line 21 and 22, we exclude any tires used for farming purposes except a farm truck. Page 14, the old language had sub-jobber in several places. We took that out. It was not appropriate. So that's all been removed. And then I think the majority of the rest of the bill is boilerplate. I'm going through it one page at a time. Page 17, last line, page 17, line 23, the previous draft read, you'd have to keep your records for 5 years. We changed that to 3 years to conform with the IRS regulations. Same page 17, line 28. We put in there written reasonable notice. Upon oral or written reasonable notice to give the people a chance to have some notification before inspection. And leafing through, this other's all boilerplate from the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson.
Page 18, line 8.
Line 8. The new sales
doesn't
type.
Doesn't read right to me.
The new sales type.
Yeah, another typo.
Yeah.
Reverse.
Reverse.
Right.
Right.
Okay. New sales type. That's us by this time, right?
Representative Anderson, you're not supposed to be reading it. Faith. And let's see. I think that's it. Anything else you have, Bruce? Yeah. I think we got it. It's clean. It's ready to go.
All right.
This could be a typo to be discovered someplace. If so, they'll have to fix it on the other side.
You were suggesting to me, Representative Parkinson, earlier that there is, as I recall, a subsequent referral to revenue, and you were suggesting that we ought to request that that be deleted and it be referred to Ways and Means instead because of the impact on the department.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We thought it appropriate. This is a fee, not a tax, and it's very common, especially I think in the Department of Environmental Quality, a lot of their regulations that there are some fees that doesn't go through the Revenue Committee. I'm of the opinion there's no reason to send it to Revenue. That our motion would be to remove the subsequent referral to Revenue and instead send it to Ways and Means, because it should go there because it has an impact on the department's budget.
All right. Do you have a motion to that effect then?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would move House Bill 2022 to the floor. Mr. Chairman, this is a committee report, isn't it?
Yes, it won't go to the floor. It'll be a committee report. Why don't we approve this, the bill, as
amended, do pass recommendations. Remove the subsequent referral to Revenue, and the committee report would read that it would go to Ways and Means. I think that's it.
Let's do that. Let's use this as the base, and you're making a motion to approve this as the base of our action. Is there any...
My motion should say LC 2022-9 dated 4/15/87. Right. It should include the two or three little conceptual amendments that we mentioned, such as the effective date.
Okay, let me do this if it's all right with you, Representative Parkin. Let's use this as the base, the bill, this LC draft. Is there any objection to that?
Hand engrossed.
Not engrossed.
It should be engrossed.
It should be engrossed. Then these little amendments that you had indicated, there is... No objections to those out there. As I recall, page 10, the 8 should be an 18 at the bottom of the page. Page 13, replacement on lines both 5 and 7, an ineffective 188 preceding fee on line 4. And then on page 18, reverse new and sales. I think that's it, is it not, Representative Parkinson?
Yes.
I think so.
All right, are there any objections to those amendments? If not, let's have then a final motion, Representative Parkinson.
Okay, I'll move.